It's time now to go beyond the headlines. And for the next 2 hours, go where every sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
We've done it. We've made it through the summer. I mean, it's still technically summer, I think. But we've made it. It's football season, baby. The NFL season kicks off today. I need to turn the applause on. We got air horns. We got a ding.
You will not be slept on no more.
No, you
brother.
Sure won't. We've That's got right. Chiefs, Ravens tonight, the defending Super Bowl champs, hosting the Baltimore Ravens in a rematch of the AFC Championship game. We will dive into that. Matt Burrows, friend of the program, said a interesting thing on our sister station, 95.7 The Game, yesterday that I would love to dive into, so we're going to do that. We've got some statistical projections for the NFL season. The Giants paid Matt Chapman. The A's had a player that they DFA'd, but they definitely made up this player.
They did.
Player is not a real person. We'll get into that. But more important than anything I just said, a shout out to you, James. A shout out to me, Kyle, and a shout out to our sponsor, Jiffy Lube, as well as everybody here at Odyssey Sacramento. We have made it 1 year. 1 year ago today, the Insiders debuted. I believe D'Lo and Casey took an extra day off, and we did a four-hour show.
Oh, we did do 4 hours.
I feel like that's a thing that happened.
I think it happened at least once. I just don't know if it was the first day.
Yeah, I think it was the first day, and then we jumped it. If memory serves, but yeah, 1 year. 1 year we've been doing this program. It's crazy.
It's amazing,
time
Kyle.
Hauls ass, man.
I'm having a good time.
I hope so.
Yeah, I don't know about you, but like this year has gone by like super quick.
Yep.
Like, you know, we're still like I feel like every day it's fresh, it's new. Like I definitely enjoy working with you, Kyle.
Same. This is the coolest freaking job. I told my wife this the other night. Because the commute gets to me, I love doing the show, and then I get to do the post show stuff, and I chat with Jesse for a while, but then it's like, man, I gotta write, and I gotta like, oh god, I gotta podcast, and I get outside of myself a little bit, but if I told, and would I like this show to be 3 hours, and would I like to have a producer? 100%, and you know, we've made that. Anybody with ears in this building wear that. But despite all of that, where I'm going to complain about the stupid things that come along with getting to do this for a living.
Yeah.
If I told me at 12 years old, that this is what I would be doing on September 5th, 2024, I would have lost my mind. It would have been like, oh my God, let's go. Get me there now.
It's crazy. If you would have told me even like 5 years ago that I would be in radio doing a show full time, I would have been like, oh, okay.
That's weird.
That took a turn. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess the media world is so different, and you have to evolve and change and be someone different all the time. You can't lose who you are and your core tenets, but you have to be malleable. You have to be willing to say yes and willing to work for pennies on the dollar and you know, risk and put yourself out there. But in the end, I'm having a good time. You're having a good time. I hope our listeners are having a good time. And, you know, it's been a good year.
And thanks to everybody who's rocked with us. That's part of what made this show, or what makes this show so fun, is the community that D'Lo and KC established. And I will talk about this any chance I get, because A, I think it's super impressive what they did, but B, it's even more impressive the continued support that everybody gives them and just immediately gave us.
Yeah.
We stepped in day one and the viewership numbers were good, because that's one of the daunting things. It used to be, before YouTube, you just got on air and you wouldn't know if anybody was listening until the ratings books came out. And now you can see that there are people there, and we have the chatty house, and people are chiming in. We have people who call the show, and it's such a cool, meaningful thing that every single day we get to jump in here and hang out with all of you guys, whether you're in the chatty house, whether you're listening on the radio, whether you're watching on YouTube and Twitch and not participating in the chatty house, you're on the Odyssey app. Maybe you listen to this show via the podcast because you can't listen live. It's really, really cool that you guys take time out of your days to do that, and we appreciate the heck out of it. And hopefully this isn't the only anniversary this show has.
Yeah. Well,
fingers crossed.
I don't expect. I expect us to be here a long time, Kyle.
Yeah, same. Yeah. That's the hope for sure.
Yeah.
So, salute to all you guys. Salute to you, James. Shout out to Charlie, D'Lo, Casey, Aaron, Stacy, everybody who helped make this show possible. Jiffy Lube, of course.
Yes.
Big shout out to Jiffy Lube. We love them very much. JiffyLube.com to find the location nearest you today. All right. So we've been doing this for a year. Now what?
What I like is it, Kyle, we can do this.
Now what do we do?
Every day, and then we stumble upon weird things, and we just like, okay, I want to know about that. And so we talk about weird things that aren't always sports related, but Katie Weaver in the New York Times, she took a deep dive into the penny. This is one of the most fascinating pieces I've seen written, and the title is America Must Free Itself from the Tyranny of the Penny. So the penny, right? The penny, the little tiny copper penny. Did you know that, first of all, it costs 3 cents to make a penny?
Yes, yes. I did know that it costs more to make a penny than the penny is worth.
Okay, so, and not only that, but people constantly don't use pennies anymore. So there are actually 240 billion pennies lying around in the United States. There's enough pennies in the United States for every man, woman, and child to have $7.24 in pennies, which is 724 pennies. Pennies are like a plague on our society.
That's insane, dude.
There's no way to get rid of them. $100 worth of pennies weighs 55 pounds. So just imagine how much weight just in pennies we have floating around. And to get rid of the penny literally takes like an act of Congress. To change anything on the penny takes an act of Congress. So there's nothing you can do about this because you would need bipartisan support, and that ain't ever going to happen.
So what I understand is, I believe in England, they don't have a 1 cent piece.
Okay.
Everything just rounds.
I would
be so fine if I'm paying $4.65 for something. That just happens to be what my coffee costs. If I'm paying $4.65 for something and I have to, or I'm sorry, let me say $4.64.
Yep.
And I'm going to pay cash. And they went, hey, it's going to be $4.65 because we don't take pennies. I'd be like, great. That's actually really helpful.
This is like the entire premise.
I don't want pennies back either.
Yeah, this is the entire premise of the movie Office Space. They just round up and steal your penny. That's like, eventually it would add up. I mean, if there's 240 billion pennies in the world.
But there's also rounding down.
Yeah, oh no, that's true.
So if it costs 482, okay, now it's 480. But if something's 483, yeah, hey, there go the couple pennies.
What if we just went full dollar store and everything was just an exact, like with tax, was just rounded to a dollar, like $5, $8, $125.
I'm sure that there are people who are adamantly against this because, you know, if 10 cents here, 10 cents there,
yeah,
and you start to, but if that's how it was and I just knew the flat dollar amount of everything, I would be so much happier. I'd be so okay with that.
I wonder if you could go like door to door and just say, do you have any old pennies you want to get rid of? And just like, I'll take whatever pennies you have. And I bet you people would just give them to you. I bet you in your garage could end up with like 50 gallon garbage cans filled with pennies.
You want to put on an APB for pennies?
Yeah, just like I am the guy who would like to collect pennies.
Send us your pennies.
Send us all your pennies. We will take all your pennies. That's a new thing. We will take all your pennies here at the Insiders. If anyone wants to bring pennies in, we will take all your pennies, and then we will collect them, and we will give we'll bring them to the bank where they will have to put them in the rolls, not us.
Hell yeah.
And then we will...
I love this.
...get rid of all the pennies and donate all the money to a local either homeless shelter or food bank.
Perfect.
How about that?
Bring us your pennies.
We will try to...
JC.
...eliminate...
Hardaway.
...every single one of loafers. The pennies. Yes. Now, I do not want a bunch of penny loafers here. That would be tragic. So we will. How about we do that? We will collect all your pennies,
and
that will be our contribution to society here on the Insiders.
So be our contribution to society, because Lord knows we're not doing anything else.
Do not sneak any dimes.
I had if you give us a dime, I will track you down and throw it at you.
Yeah, throw it at you.
Pennies only.
Pennies only.
My lid to my new coffee mug that you got me is very convenient, because I can just set my tea bag on top of their paws. And that's nice, because yesterday I put it on a paper towel and it did not go well.
Okay.
I had to do some maintenance. So being able to just drop that on the lid is great. One time in high school, I had an English teacher who, and we'll get to 49ers, we'll get to NFL season, all that's coming up.
Will we?
But yes. I had this high school teacher, history teacher, and I think it was my freshman year, maybe freshman, sophomore year, whenever it was, doesn't matter. Anyways, she's like got this little pep in her step, and she's probably in her 50s.
Okay.
She got this pep in her step one day, and she's like bouncing around the classroom, and we're like, what's up? Like, what? This is weird. She's like, I found a penny on the ground today. We're like, oh, a lucky penny. And then somebody in our class goes, it's just a penny. Like, why are you excited? Like, you won the lottery, you found a penny. And she goes, if I find a penny on the ground every day for a year, do you know how much money I would have?
$3.
And again, yeah, we're a bunch of 15-year-olds. We're like, $3.65? Like, what?
She's
not a lot, actually.
She's an English teacher, not a math teacher.
Well, if I find a penny on the ground every day for a year. Like,
as someone with a bad back, it's got to be like a 5 spot. If there's a dollar on the ground, I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to risk it.
That's so bougie.
If I lean
you've managed to out bougie yourself. That's crazy.
If I see a dollar and I'm like, if I lean over and throw out my back picking up that dollar, I'm going to be very upset with myself. Now, a 5 spot, maybe I'd pick it up, but... Yeah.
Dog.
I'm not picking
up
a quarter.
No, you don't get to. No.
I'm not.
No, look. If your line, for I'm willing to throw out my back is separated by $4, no chance, dude.
But if I find a $5 bill every day, Kyle, how much would I have?
That's a good point. That's a really good point. NFL season kicks off tonight. Chiefs. Ravens in Kansas City. We will dive into that. I went to the A's game last night.
Mm.
I'm going to 2 more. I will be going to one on September 24th. That's the Tuesday of the final home series. And then I'm going to go to the last game. I might be off that day. Uh-oh. So we got to figure that out. But I'm going to the last game at the Coliseum. And it was weird. Because they lost 16-3. They got mollywopped. But there was never a bad vibe. It's almost like a... I don't know how to describe it because it's eerie. They've taken all the signage down. Mm-hmm. You know when you walk across the BART ramp and they had the Raiders banner and the A's banner and then they just had the A's banners and it was like the World Series and the Rookies of the Year, MVPs or whatever they were. Those are gone when you walk. So now when you walk across the BART bridge, it's just stadium. There's no signage. And when you get into the stadium, everything is closed. All the like kids areas are closed. A bunch of the like booths, like food and vendors is what I was looking for. Like food and merchandise vendors in the concourse are closed and like off to the side. The team stores are all half full because they're not going to restock anything.
No.
It's just it is a weird vibe in there.
Mm.
And then everybody there is, so many people are like, yeah, this is our last game. I've been coming here since I was 8 years old and I'm here with my family who's in from out of town. That's what I went with my buddy Evan from 95.7. He brought his parents and who live down in San Diego. And a shout out to the Giddings family, by the way. They were a delight. And they went as a family because, yeah, hey, it's just their last time at the Coliseum, last time at an A's game together. And it was just a, even as they were giving up 7 runs in the, I think it was the 6th inning, then they give up 4 the next inning.
Getting pummeled.
Yeah, it was just, but everybody's out there, you know, doing the Tristan Gray jokes and the Jansen Junk as a person. You know, just we're furiously Googling who some of these players are.
Oh yeah.
And just having a great time. And a big salute to Mariners fans in the building who were all very, very chill. Understood kind of the assignment, understood what was going on. It was I expected it to be almost funeral-ish in terms of the vibe, and it just wasn't. It was a really good time.
I'm intrigued. I don't think I will see one more game. I did go to the reverse boycott game, and I kind of said that's going to be my last game. Like,
that was a good game.
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun.
For me to go to a game, it takes hours, right? Like, I have to carve out an entire day. It's not an easy thing just because I live so far away. But I would definitely consider going to one more game. Especially, I would take my oldest for sure. My wife would probably go too. But, you know, my oldest and I have been to quite a few games and we're A's fans. So I just don't know that I kind of worry that I would go and it would be like almost hollow. Like it, you wouldn't get what you're looking for out of it.
What would you be looking for?
Some sort of closure, I would assume, as like someone who's walking into the building for the last time. I don't know, like as someone who walked into Arco Arena for the last time, like you felt a certain way, like, okay, I spent a lot of time here, not only working, but going to games and, you know, all of the games that I've been to, I don't know.
But that vibe is so different knowing that like,
They're moving on to a better space. Yeah.
Right. If they had gone to Seattle or Anaheim or Virginia Beach. If they had gone to one of that leaving that arena the last time would have been the vibe would have been a lot different. Like there's nostalgia and it's like a bummer, but also hey, moving on to better things.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
For people who live in the Bay Area who are going to it's like this is it. This thing is gone now. And if you've decided, here's the thing for you. If you had decided the reverse boycott game was your last game, like you took that in then.
I did.
Now you'd be going back as like a just to do it.
Yeah, because I think that the reverse boycott game, because there were so many people there, and it was a fun game to go to.
It was a freaking blast.
Yeah, I felt like you got the feels, like being there, like how sad this is that this isn't going to happen again. I just don't know that going and sitting there with 2,000 or 3,000 fans at this point would have that same energy, that same feeling. And you're right, like all the things that are missing. You know, it's almost like if you walked in and they put in a urinal, you'd be like, oh, well, this doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
As opposed to just peeing in a trough, which is what you have to do at the Coliseum.
I saw when I was in the bathroom last night, washing my hands.
Yep.
This dad and his kid walk in. And apparently, kid's first time at the Coliseum, first time in a trough. Because dad was like, I hear his dad go, yep, just pick a spot. I was like, wow, I'm glad that these two got to experience that. That's great. It's a coming of age tale. Going to the bathroom at the Coliseum for the first time.
I mean, I have a lot of memories at the Coliseum. You know, yeah, I've been to so many games, like first baseball game ever, but I mean, I saw Pink Floyd at the Oakland Coliseum.
That's like, so sick.
Just not to have it there as like a functioning, you know, like facility is going to be really weird. I mean, I'm sure they're playing soccer there. Yeah.
So, I'm interested to kind of see what becomes of it.
It won't be there that long. They're going to develop that entire area.
I would imagine so.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was definitely a little odd, but I had a good time and look forward to going to a couple more with the fam. So, nice. We'll cross that bridge when we get to it because we've got NFL football tonight, 5:20 kickoff, the Baltimore Ravens visiting the Kansas City Chiefs. I can't decide if I like that this is the week one game or the first game. Because I understand wanting to put a premier matchup. It is Thursday night football. It is celebration of the previous year's Super Bowl champs in their home stadium. You want to have that good matchup. All eyes going to be on the NFL tonight. Everybody knows it's Thursday night kickoff, week one. Can't wait. Everybody's gearing up for Sunday or Monday. Oh, man, we're so excited for football season. So you want to make sure the matchup carries heft, right?
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, with the way the NFL goes now and the way teams prepare for the season, the first 3, 4, sometimes 5 weeks are almost de facto preseason games while teams get into a groove. I don't want to say get in shape because that's what they're doing in camp, but get into a game groove mm-hmm. and really hit their stride in a season. And that's where the AFC Championship game rematch, Ravens-Chiefs, that's when I would love to see in week like 9.
Yeah, even if it's mid-season, yeah, like, you know, week 6, week 7, mm-hmm. yeah, I wish they would have saved this one.
Me too.
Because they're not division rivals, so they don't play each other again. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? So if it's a team you're going to play twice, that would be one thing. But this is one of the marquee games of the year. You know, your two MVP candidates, two mm-hmm. of, you know, maybe 5 MVP candidates. And I would have liked to have seen a little bit later because the football can be really, really sloppy early in the season.
Yeah.
Do we even know where is this playing on? Like
what? NBC.
It's on NBC?
Yeah. And Peacock, okay. I believe. So I'm looking at the Chiefs schedule. So they get Chiefs-Texans is week 16 in Kansas City.
Okay.
Like if the Texans are good, that could be a really, really fun that game. It's late in the yeah. year. Like that could be a blast, right? So there's not a ton of you start looking at the Chiefs' home schedule this year. You know, Buccaneers, Chiefs-Bucks is not.
Nope.
Like you had Chiefs-Lions last year, but the Lions were that team that, remember in 22, they beat the Packers to eliminate the Packers from the postseason. It was like, wow, I think they won 6 in a row to end the year.
Mm-hmm.
Or they start 1-6, I think, or something like that. And they ripped off a bunch of wins. They knocked the Packers out of the playoffs. And it was like, all right, here come the Lions. I think the Buccaneers are just kind of there. Like you said, I don't think having it be a division game is a ton of fun. So we'll eliminate all the division games. And then you've got Texans. Those are kind of the other options. But week 2, the Chiefs host the Cincinnati Bengals.
Oh, see, that would have been fun too.
Way better. Way better. Give me Bengals Chiefs tonight because that's still a AFC Championship game from a couple of years ago.
Uh-huh.
Joe Burrow coming back. But that to me fits this so much better. And then give me that Ravens game later in the year. Give me Chiefs Broncos week. Give me Bengals Chiefs week 1. You can go Chiefs Broncos week 2, and then plug in Chiefs Ravens at that Chiefs Broncos game on November 10th.
Mm.
That would be such a preferable way to do this.
I agree. There just had to have been a better game this weekend.
Yeah, and I want to learn something tonight.
Yeah,
I want to be able to walk away from that game going, "Hey, I know something." But we're not gonna learn anything about where these two teams sit in the AFC because we watched the Lions beat the Chiefs at home last year in Kansas City in Week 1.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, "Oh man, hey, watch out, the Lions might be something." And they were. The Lions were really good, and I think they're going to be really good again this year. But that was a sloppy game. It was not the quality of game you would have gotten if you got Chiefs Lions later in the year. So, it's cool.
Yeah.
I'll obviously be tapped in and excited that regular season football is back, but I can't if the Ravens lose this game by 30, I'm not writing the Ravens off for the year. And vice versa.
No.
I don't know.
You know, the Chiefs, didn't they lose week 1 last year because Kelce missed a game and they dropped a couple of balls?
Yeah, Kelce was out and Chris Jones was also out.
Oh, yeah. Man, I don't know. I mean, just like going through the schedule, you always have to have the Chiefs. You have the Super Bowl winner to open the season, right? Mm-hmm. But if you didn't, like there are other games I would like to see, like instead of this. I would love like a Thursday night Rams-Lions game tonight would have been perfectly fine for me.
Hmm.
Even a Jets-Niners, that would have been perfectly fine for me.
No, it's got to be the defending champ, though.
Yeah, it's got to be the defending champ.
Yeah. I'll just say this now. I think the Chiefs are going to have their 96 Bulls season this year.
Oh.
Yeah. I think they want a three-peat. And I think after last year, where there was so much doubt thrown their way and so many questions about if they're any good. And you got all this stuff with Travis Kelce. Is he going to retire? Like, oh, obviously Travis Kelce's off the field life is now somehow overtaken how successful he is on the field in the kind of mainstream discourse. I think the Chiefs are going to be so locked in, and maybe their defense won't be as good. I know they lost L'Jarius Sneed. But I think they are going to put together an offensive season and that just makes any step back they take defensively irrelevant. I think they're going to win like 15 games, and I think they're going to win another Super Bowl. I
You're calling your shot now? Your preseason pick?
I'm not trying to be hot take guy here by picking the Chiefs. Like, that's everybody's doing that, but I think we're going to see a thoroughly dominant year from them, where I don't think it's going to be a 10-7 and they sneak in and they got to go on the road a bunch in the playoffs. I think this is going to be the Chiefs team that everybody goes, oh man, this was the culmination of this run. Like, wow, they are incredible.
Okay.
That's how I think this year is going for
no,
them.
No, I think they're going to go for that, but I also think that there's like plenty of teams out there that are stumbling blocks.
Okay.
But like throughout your career, like if you're a guy like Patrick Mahomes and you have an opportunity to do something that's just like very, very, very crazy to win three Super Bowls in a row. I mean, that would be just like outlandish.
Unprecedented.
In the modern era for someone to be able to go and do this, right?
Mm-hmm.
You got to go for it. You got to be all in. That's the goal. I think it will be, this season should be the Chiefs against everybody. Everyone trying to take down the Chiefs.
Mm.
And I think it could be a really, really cool sight to see as his team is trying to trudge towards like something just so incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And who can knock them off? Or is this team just like, what did we call them last year? The team of destiny, week 2.
Week 2.
The San Francisco 49ers and Miami Dolphins were the teams of destiny.
They sure were.
They were.
Yeah, I look at their schedule, and you mentioned stumbling blocks. Maybe it's the Ravens. Maybe the Bengals are going to be awesome. But I'm not thrilled with what their division looks like. They visit the Bills this year. I think you see the Bills take a little bit of a step back. The Texans is as good as I think the Texans might be. I don't see them going into Kansas City and winning again. Like, that's, I think it starts tonight too. I think the Chiefs are going to lock in. I think they're going to beat the heck out of the Ravens, and it's going to set a course for this dominant three-peat of a season, because that's what they are shooting for.
I'm with it.
I can't.
I'm with you.
I'm not doubting a locked-in Patrick Mahomes.
And that is why I kept Patrick Mahomes in fantasy football.
Smart move. All right. We got plenty more NFL stuff to get to. Matt Barrows of The Athletic said a fascinating thing on the radio yesterday, and James and I are going to dig in to find out if he's right. He's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. Jiffy Lube's a sponsor here on ESPN 1320 and Sacramento Sports Leader. Fun.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
I have no idea what I did wrong setting up our show today.
Chaos.
I know it's not like a super secret. I just didn't remove a couple of the things I needed to remove, so I'm having to hit extra buttons. That just throws me off my rhythm a little bit. So we're going to delete all of those and that.
We have rules here, Kyle. I don't touch buttons.
That's true.
I don't
touch. You should.
Yep.
I need to do better about that. Donnie, this is not Nom. This is bowling. There are rules. Shout out to the Big Lebowski. So Matt Barrows was on 95.7 The Game yesterday. Matt Barrows, friend of the program, covers the 49ers for The Athletic and has for a long time. And he said something to, I believe it was Steiny and Guru yesterday, that I did a hard double take at what he said. Because Matt Barrows is not a take artist. Matt Barrows is a journalist who has covered the 49ers for 20, I think this is his 23rd season he's been around. And what he says carries weight. And when he says something like this, I pay attention. And typically when he says something like this, I just believe him. But in this instance, I'm not sure I do. And I would like to dig into it. So what Matt Barrow said on 95.7 The Game was that this year's 49ers team, the 2024 49ers, are the best team that they have, that they've had, since he started covering the club in 2002. And that's wild to me, not because they've had a ton of awesome teams. We were going through it today, and this is something I think that gets kind of lost to history a little bit. They didn't make the playoffs, though, 3-0-4.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to Alex Smith. And then after, so they made the playoffs in 2002. They didn't make it again until Jim Harbaugh got there in 2011. Then they went to the playoffs three times. And then 2014 through 2018, they were not a playoff team.
Nope.
They've had some really, really bad stretches of football since 2002 when Matt Barrows took over. So we can eliminate a ton of teams. We can just wipe them off the map. But I think you start after, okay, so the team had to have made the playoffs. So that gives you 2002, gives you 2011, 12, 13, and then this present run, 19, 21, 22, and 23.
Yeah, so 14 years we can just wipe out.
Just gone. Get them out of my face.
Yep.
So what I wanted to do to try and do this exercise, because trying to go team by team and then assessing each team and then trying to compare it to a different team, down the, it's nigh impossible. So we're going to go position by position here.
Okay.
And I haven't done this exercise yet. I want to work this out with you. So then 916-909-1320, 916-909-1320, if you would like to participate in the conversation, please do. Best 49ers team since 2002. We're going to start at quarterback.
Okay.
And I take this, I'll tell you why in a second. But I don't take this necessarily as starting quarterback. I just take the entire quarterback room into account.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that matters a little bit, particularly with the 49ers, because they've had so many injury problems under center for the last 6 years. I think 2012 stands out to me.
As a better quarterback room?
Yeah.
Or as the best quarterback? Okay, so yeah, that is a very, very good quarterback room, and it's Alex Smith and Colin Kaepernick, right?
Yes, and the best version of Colin Kaepernick.
Yes, yes. I would say that while I get that, I am still, just as a passer, just as a pure passer and a guy who's going to lead your team,
mm-hmm.
I'm really, really feeling like Purdy is giving that quarterback room a run for its money. Like, statistically speaking, Purdy's mm-hmm. the greatest, like, he's had the greatest single seasons in mm-hmm. 49ers history,
mm-hmm.
which is absolutely wild to consider when Joe Montana and Steve Young were both Hall of Famers, you know, have been there in the last 35 years. So I don't know. Like, it's tough, but I definitely think Purdy's in the running. And I think that this version, this season's version of Purdy
mm-hmm.
could throw for 4,800 yards.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. That's, if you're going to take this to its logical conclusion with Brock Purdy,
mm-hmm.
and consider what he did last year in his first full season as a starter,
mm-hmm.
did all the things you just mentioned, best statistical season by a 49ers quarterback in history. And you consider also, this is another thing that's gotten kind of lost, he had major elbow surgery last offseason.
Yeah.
he didn't get to do a full offseason of getting better at quarterback. He had to rehab his elbow. And then he stepped in day two of training camp and was on a little bit of a pitch count and still finishing up his rehab. So there's a very real chance that the season Brock Purdy puts together this year is just puts him head and shoulders above everybody.
Yeah.
Regardless of since 2002, regardless of what the rest of the quarterback room looks like. So That's fair. I'll lean 24 here and assume for now that we're going to get a better version of Brock Purdy in 2024.
Yeah, because, I mean, for my money, he's better than Jeff Garcia.
Yeah.
There's no question he's better than Tim Rattay or Alex Smith or Trent Dilfer or Sean Hill. Mm-hmm. And then Alex Smith for another 3 years. And then Blaine Gabbert is the leading quarterback 1 year for this team.
Sure was.
And Nick Mullins, leading quarterback for this team 1 year. Like, right. Like there have been, and even Jimmy Garoppolo. I mean, he's just a much better player than Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yep.
He took the same team and you're like, oh my goodness, that's what this looks like with a real quarterback.
Yeah, he's just a better player.
Which is
yeah.
something like, he's a better player, but it's something that, again, we go back to Stephen Ruiz's, like his whole idea, right?
Mm-hmm.
You do have this moment where you take one quarterback who's done good things and you replace him with a young, undrafted, well, final pick in the draft in his rookie season, final nine games, whatever it was. And he just shows you that what he looks like, he's so much better.
Mm-hmm.
And it was almost instantaneous. You're like,
yeah,
holy cow, this guy just, he has a better grasp of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where like these problems with, hey, I don't know if he would be able to do this same thing somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but there was someone else that was there before who couldn't do the same thing he's doing. And you can say, well, Jimmy Garoppolo is just not that good. You can make that argument. And okay. But there's also a possibility that Brock Purdy is just this dude.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's right. The Jimmy Garoppolo thing is interesting to me because he had started to play so much better right before he got hurt. He was playing the best football he'd played since 2017 when he kind of burst on the scene and won those five games at the end of that year after he got traded to San Francisco. So he had started to play really well with Christian McCaffrey being integrated into the offense, and they're starting to figure things out. And okay, hey, look at Jimmy figuring out, he's making plays on the run and he's making secondary reaction plays. And holy smokes, where has this been the last 3 years? Mm-hmm. And then he gets hurt and Brock Purdy comes in and kind of does all those things. Meanwhile, Jimmy goes to Vegas and gets paid and stinks. And that's where I think if somebody wants to, this is a little bit separate from the conversation that we're having about best team or whatever, but that's where I don't have much pushback. If somebody wants to say, well, if you want an example of what would happen to Brock Purdy if he leaves the Kyle Shanahan and 49ers ecosystem, look no further than Jimmy Garoppolo in Vegas. Now, the pushback for me is, well, I think Brock's just a better player than Garoppolo.
Yeah.
But the fall off was so precipitous for Garoppolo when he went to Vegas that I think it lends credence to the argument that, man, if you put Brock Purdy on a, let's say, last year's Vegas team, maybe he's better than Jimmy, but it's not like he's going to elevate them to the postseason or anything crazy like that.
No, I understand. I'm with you. And, you know, like, I'm not making this a, like, Drew Bledsoe, Tom Brady, like he steps in and all of a sudden, but who knows what the future holds.
Yeah, the only real argument for me with if you wanted to put somebody instead, again, if you're just assuming you're going to get the best version of Brock Purdy this year, or you're going to say 23 or 24 Brock Purdy is the best quarterback since 2002.
Yep.
Which is the point of this exercise. We're just going position by position since 02. And I think the only argument is Colin Kaepernick in 2012.
Yeah.
That run he went on was so sick. And again, he didn't sustain it, and we can do the rest of the show on why his career fell apart. But that I want to make sure that gets mentioned because he was so freaking good through that second half of that regular season and into the playoffs. He was really, really good. But yeah, so if you want to say it's 24 Brock Purdy, and that's part of the impetus for saying that this is the best 49ers team since 2002, which is what Matt Barrows said on 95.7 yesterday, I think that's okay. The running back room.
Hang on, I want to mention one thing too. If Barrows would have started in like 2000, you could make the argument that Jeff Garcia's run in his first 3 years as a 49ers quarterback would compete with this. I mean,
Jeff Garcia was good.
42-78 in his second season with 31 touchdowns and 35-38 with 32 touchdowns his second season. He fell off to only 21 touchdowns in 2002.
Right.
But those first 2 years were really good.
Yeah.
So
Yeah. What about the running back room?
The running back room is tough because I think that McCaffrey is the best running back in football today.
Mm-hmm.
But I also, if you go through every single one of these years and you see like the 10-year stretch of Frank Gore,
mm-hmm.
there were years where Frank Gore and others,
mm-hmm.
I think, were better collectively than what we see from McCaffrey by himself. Like the other mm-hmm. guys with McCaffrey are unproven. Elijah Mitchell's out for the season.
Mm-hmm.
So the running back room, I'm going to, like, they're some years here where, you know, Frank Gore put up 1,700 yards, 1,600 and something yards.
Sure.
I mean, he was incredible. And then the other guys around him, I think, were really good. Now, if we're going to include Juszczyk, okay.
Mm.
But still, I don't think they use Juszczyk enough to make him part of the conversation.
Yeah.
It's tough. But they're like, to single out one year where Frank Gore was better than what McCaffrey will be this year is tough.
So I'm not going to say McCaffrey this year. I'm going to say McCaffrey last year. I don't think he's going to repeat what he did last season.
I agree with you.
Like I think they're going to, his workload's going to scale back a little bit. He's 28 now. It's just really hard to do what he did 2 years in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's a perfect marriage of skill set and coaching staff and offensive personnel. Like I totally get that, but I'll bank on Brock Purdy being better this year. I'm not going to bank on Christian McCaffrey being better. And I think the only argument from a team standpoint is the 2019 running back room, which was Raheem Mostert and Tevin Coleman and Matt Breida.
And Jeff Wilson.
And Jeff Wilson, who didn't get a ton of burn in 19, but still a good NFL player. That's the only top-to-bottom room that I think is probably competing with this group.
Okay.
What I can't get behind, and I saw... I believe it was Barrow's coworker at The Athletic, David Lombardi, was going through and basically defending Barrow's take and saying the 49ers improved at every position this offseason. I don't think they improved at running back, dude. You're getting a 1 year older Christian McCaffrey. Elijah Mitchell is a good player, and he's not available now.
Yep.
Jordan Mason has been effective in 83 career carries, but still a question mark.
Mm-hmm.
Isaac Arendo, huge question mark. And Patrick Taylor is a special teams guy. So I can't comfortably say they improved at running back. I'll say last year's running back room, thanks to Christian McCaffrey, was better than this year's.
I would agree with you fully. And I don't know that they're... I mean, it's possible that McCaffrey doubles down and mm-hmm. has the same type of season. It's just really difficult. Like,
yeah, man.
I don't see them shifting gears where he gets a lot more opportunity.
I would agree.
And I think you're also going to be cognizant, there we go, jeez, of the fact that you cannot hit, you know, have him have 22 to 25 touches a game,
mm-hmm.
that you're going to have to get Jordan Mason some carries. You're going to have some short yardage plays where you need to hand the ball to somebody who it's okay if he gets
mm-hmm.
walloped at the line
yeah.
as opposed to McCaffrey. And I hope that they do that, but I don't have faith in that Shanahan will actually do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the wide receiver room,
yeah.
I'm torn on this.
Okay.
So Terrell Owens in 2002 was the best wide of Brandon Ayuk, Debo Samuel, pick your favorite receiver they've had since 2002.
Mm-hmm.
Terrell Owens the best, in my opinion, Terrell Owens is one of the three best wide receivers who's ever put on a football uniform. But the rest of that receiving core in 02 was not good. So they're out.
Okay.
I think it has to be a receiving core from the last 5 or 6 years because none of the 2011, 2012, or 2013 teams were particularly talented at that position. It was a lot of Michael Crabtree. It was a lot of Mario Manningham.
Anquan Boldin.
Anquan Boldin was in there.
Yep.
But never all kind of peaking at the same time.
Yeah.
I wanted to go hipster and say 2021 ahead of 2023 or 2024.
Okay.
Because that was the Debo All-Pro season.
Mm.
1,770 scrimmage yards, 14 total touchdowns. But dude, last year, I think it's a wash. I think it's a push for me. Last year and this year.
Yeah, I do think that this year has the potential to be better.
I think the potential is there for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're going to have a little bit of awkwardness with Ayuk. Maybe he finishes with 1150 or 1200 yards. Mm-hmm. But I think Debo also being near a contract year, if not in a contract year, is going to be highly efficient. I also think that Juwan Jennings has cemented himself as like a really, really good option. And then I like the other guys. I like Cowings. I like the Ricky Pearsall pick, although who knows what that when he'll play. So I do like the room, and I think it has the potential to be better than last year.
Yeah, I'm just Brandon Ayuk was 1,342 scrimmage yards or receiving yards last year. Excuse me, 7 total touchdowns. Debo Samuel, 1,117 total scrimmage yards and 12 total touchdowns. Like,
yeah,
asking that group to be better this year. And maybe down the line, Ricky Pearsall and Jacob Cowing are significantly better than, who was it last year? Ronnie Bell and Ray McLeod. Like, yeah, no doubt. Cowing already looks like he's going to be a better offensive option than McLeod. But I got to see it with Brandon Ayuk first after he held out or held in for the entire preseason and training camp. I got to see it with Debo Samuel. All signs point to Debo looks like all-pro Debo again. But even if he does what he did last year and goes 1,200 scrimmage yards and double-digit touchdowns, you'd feel pretty good about that. I think it's a push with last year minimum. I can't say that the 2024 receiver room is definitely better than last year.
No, I would agree with you.
I can't get there. How am I going to write that? 23/24? Yeah, I'm calling it a push.
Right. Okay.
At tight end, this is not the best version of George Kittle, and Eric Saubert and Jake Tungis are not...
No. This is not it.
Yeah, honestly, if we're talking top to bottom tight end room, 2011 group is pretty good. 2012 group is good too.
Yeah, the 2018 group is really good. Like there,
that was peak George Kittle. That was the year he set the record.
Yeah, but receiving yards. But you're right. The Vernon Davis, Delanie Walker.
Yeah, man, Vernon Davis, Delanie Walker, Garrett Celek.
Yeah,
in 2012,
it was really good.
That's a good group.
Yeah,
It wasn't. It wasn't the best version of Vernon Davis. He had 41 for 548 and 5 touchdowns. It wasn't his best statistical season. The year prior to that, he went 67 catches, 792 yards, and 6 touchdowns. And you still had Delanie Walker there then. I'm going 2011 or 2012 in the tight end room.
Okay, I'm with you.
That's a fantastic group.
Yeah, I think you can go there, and you could also just like Kittle. Like I don't remember who the other tight ends are on the 2018 roster, but that is a very, I mean, like just him by himself is incredible. Oh, it's Garrett Celek.
Ross Dwelly?
Ross Dwelly.
Yeah.
And Cole Wick.
Oh, the great Cole Wick.
Yeah, Ross Dwelly had,
of course.
Had
I believe,
two catches.
Was Cole Wick?
He did not
catch.
Was he
in Louisville? No, that was Cole Hikutini. Where did Cole Wick go to school?
Cole Wick.
This is a thing only I care about. I'm so sorry for everybody listening.
Oh,
Incarnate Word.
Incarnate Word.
Of course.
I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, Cole Hikutini was Louisville, I believe. And then the offensive line. I'm going 2012 for the offensive line as well, dude. That 2012 O-line was so sick.
Yeah.
It was Joe Staley. Mike Iupati is an all-pro. Jonathan Goodwin was awesome at center. Alex Boone was a very good right guard. And Anthony Davis was an excellent right tackle.
Yeah.
That offensive line, just top to bottom, was
and
sick.
How long until Anthony Davis retired?
A few years.
Was it?
Yeah, it was a few seasons. So that was 2012. He retired in 15. Retired after 14. He played 7 games. He had concussion problems. Retired in 15. Came back for a game in 2016, and that was it.
Oh, got it.
He's still only 34.
That's wild.
About to turn 35.
He's younger than Trent Williams.
Oh, yeah. He was drafted. Same draft.
Oh, wow.
Same draft as Trent Williams.
That's wild.
Yeah, man. So I'm going 2012 with that group. With that, I just the bottom line so far as we wrap up the offense here, quarterback we're going with the 24 group. Running back, we're going 23. Wide receiver, it's a 23-24 push. But then tight end and offensive line, we're going 2012 as best position group since 2002. I think this 2012 team is so slept on. They were so freaking good, man.
Yeah. No.
And we'll talk about it when we get to the defensive side, but I just you talk about 2012 and you go Alex Smith the first half of the year playing as well as he played, and then he gets that concussion against the Rams. Colin Kaepernick comes in. I believe they tied that game, but then he makes his debut on Monday Night Football against the Bears. And if you remember, that Bears team was setting records for takeaways. I think they had a takeaway in every game that year except against the 49ers. And Colin Kaepernick comes out in his starting debut and lights them up on Monday Night Football. And he hit the deep crosser to Kyle Williams, and Jim Harbaugh loses his mind on the sideline. And it looked like Colin Kaepernick and the running quarterback, because that was the same year as RG3 came into the league and lit it up as a rookie. It looked like he was going to take over the league, and obviously that style of play didn't. An evolution of it has started to take over the NFL.
Yeah,
but I just don't want it to get lost. That's going to be my goal.
Okay.
I don't want the 2012 team, because the 2019 team was really good, and obviously 23 was really good, and the 24 team has a chance to be good, but that 2012 group, I'm not sure that I would take a team top to bottom over them.
Okay.
They were, man.
I'm with you. Yeah.
5 yards short of taking a late lead in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that offensive line was awesome.
Offensive line was super good.
Yeah, that's a good
team.
It's tough. Like, I can easily, we got like a couple of minutes before we go to break. I can easily make the claim that this is the most talented Sacramento Kings team I've ever covered in my 15, going into my 15 season.
It's not even close.
I don't think it's close.
I don't think it's, no.
No, I mean, 2 years ago, yeah, the team was really good. I think this team has the potential to be just way better. Like, I might be wrong. Like, just overall talent, though.
It would be
though.
Super funny to do this same exercise with the Kings from, like, 02 to 22.
Well, I mean, 02.
Sorry, not 02.
2010 is when I started covering the team.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's not even close. Yeah.
Yeah.
Although, you know, we could sit here and debate the DeMarcus Cousins versus Domantas Sabonis, like, just individual years, and we could debate, like, the Rudy Gay years versus whoever you want to put it, small forward. I guess that would be DeMar DeRozan, so DeMar DeRozan's going to win.
Yeah, but the top end talent, I feel like, is just so overwhelming.
Yeah.
Because you can call, if you want to call Sabonis and Cousins a wash, again, if you feel strongly one way or the other, fine, but
yeah.
I think there's an argument to be made for both. But nobody's touching De'Aaron Fox. Nobody's touching DeMar DeRozan.
No, it's just whether other versions of De'Aaron Fox are better than him.
Yeah, right.
And then Keegan Murray, you expect Keegan Murray to be better.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of players on this team that you just, like, expect to be better than they were before.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, I think by the end of this year, I think you'll comfortably take Keegan Murray over Rudy Gay.
Yep.
Comfortably. I'm sure a lot of people would do it right now. But all right, we'll get to the defensive side of the ball after this. After this break, we'll continue talking NFL. We got some stat projections from ESPN for this season that we'll dive into, and the Giants paid somebody. We'll talk about that as well. That's James. I'm Kyle. We're the Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube, here on ESPN 1320 Sacramento Sports Center.